I'm Jay Barrett. This episode of the Kenai Conversation was recorded on Wednesday morning, November 13th. So keep that in mind when we give out the phone number and make dated references. I have Sally Cassano here, and she knows a little bit about theater. As a matter of fact, we were going to talk about her summertime production of the Vagina Monologues later in the show. But she is not involved in Lost in Yonkers. So let's just talk about theater for a while. Sal,
I could talk a blue streak about theater, Jay.
All right. We already said vagina on the air, so blue streak, I'd say you bet.
There we go. First of all, our community has some pretty phenomenal actors and theaters. Both Kenai Performers and the Triumvirate Theaters are both very involved in community and are integral in the health and well-being, I think, of this community. Joe does a fantastic job out there and actors go between those theaters. It's not like Kenai Performers, they stick to their own and the Triumvirate Theater sticks to their own, which can happen, but it really doesn't. And that speaks very well of our community, how great we work together.
And I think the fact that the community can support two theater groups.
Oh, certainly. Awesome. And not only can it support the two separate entities, the theater groups, but they support side gigs. Like, I do a few side gigs at our lodge down there in Kasilof, and we've done well with those, and they've been fundraisers.
Mm-hmm. No. What is it about theater that people get so excited about? I've been in two productions in my life. One was in first grade.
Oh, what was it, Jay?
It was a Thanksgiving play. I played a tree.
Perfect.
I was dressed up in construction paper as a tree. And then I think in second grade, I was moved up to Indian drummer. So I got to wear a vest and I drummed during this very same Thanksgiving play.
Oh, good.
But that's good. It. And I there's lots of cool stuff about theater, but it's never really attracted me like it does some people who just go gaga over it. What's the deal?
Well, the fact that it's a live story being told. I mean, we have television and we get excited about television and it's edited to death. And of course, we get excited about radio, which I like to refer to as blind theater, because you can be anyone in here.
Oh, sure. Theater of the mind, they call it.
Certainly. For me, I'll tell you the little story about how I got involved in theater, and I credit it for, it could have saved my life. So I grew up in a neighborhood in northwestern Montana. It was very little supervision when I was a child, and my brother and I sort of roamed the streets like any good hooligans would, and the community college, a huge brick building, a couple blocks from where we grew up, had a theater up top. And from the alley, you could see the theater windows up there. And I think I was about 8 and my brother was 6. And we decided we were going to see who could throw the rocks from the alley up there hard enough to, of course, break out one of these windows. Like I said, little hooligans.
Sure.
Well, to our surprise, we turned around and here is, we thought, because we were so small, Big Pat Niels. And he was the director for FVCC Theater. And he looked like, remember the old nacho cheese Dorito commercials from the 70s where the big guy with the huge curly hair and...
No, I don't remember that.
Well, he looked just like that guy.
Okay.
And we thought that he was. And he said to us in this booming voice, I will tell your stepfather. And we were scared to death. And he said, but I won't. You be here every night after school for rehearsal. So that began theater. The first production he made us be in, I mean, I do that in air quotes, because we were very happy to be involved and probably just needed that kind of guidance and attention. We did Oliver. We were both little workhouse boys, and we put our all into it. We did every show at that theater till we graduated high school.
Really?
And then continued theater once we moved to other places. And I even continued in theater when I lived in Mexico. I did theater at Teatro Juarez.
Wow. So it saved you from being a little hoodlum.
It did. Lord knows where I could have ended up had it not been for theater. And that is something to, you know, it just is good for a community. It gives a space for children and adults to be creative.
Yeah, yeah. Hi. Oh, look, it's Sherry Johnson.
Yay, Sherry Johnson.
Yes, I finally found my way here.
Did you get lost?
I miss the turn for this place every time I come here.
I know. Yeah, coming from the south, right?
Yeah,
it's tough from that. It's easier when you're coming from the north because as soon as you see the city limit sign, it's right. The next left.
Right, exactly. Yeah.
You know, maybe Jay, we could get a wacky inflatable arm-flailing tube man out there.
Oh, we're, ask the guy at the Kenai River Pot Shop down here to borrow it.
We wouldn't want them getting mixed up, however.
You know, did you notice, I think our sign has been moved further off the road. Is that...
Either that or stuff is growing around it.
Yeah, I think it's been moved back. We do have a bigger space on the sign now, but it's just further off the road.
Well, we're the first right-hand turn after Baker Hughes.
Right.
That's what I know.
East of Edie's and west of Wildwood.
And on that note.
Well, Sherry Johnson, hi, how are you?
Hi, I'm doing well.
Wow. We're here on the Kenai Conversation, folks. We have Sherry Johnson, who is directing Lost in Yonkers for the Kenai Performers. And you told me the other day you directed this for students as well, right?
Yes. When I taught at Kenai Central, this was the first show that I directed there. In fact, it was the first show that I had ever directed.
Oh, my.
I took over the program because if somebody didn't take it over, it wasn't going to happen. And I'm really firmly committed to teenagers having access to the arts. So I said, okay, we'll make it happen. And that was in 2003. And it was lots of fun, learned a lot. And so when I decided that I was ready to look at trying to work with adults, because that was really intimidating to me. I thought, well, why not? It's fitting. Let's do the same show.
Wow, excellent. Let's move that microphone down just a little bit towards you. There you go. That way you don't
better?
Have to. Yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
Great.
Tell me about the play a little bit. It was by Neil Simon. I read just this morning he debuted it on New Year's Eve.
In 1990, yes.
Yeah. And it won the Pulitzer the next year.
It did, yes. Yeah. It moved in February of 91. It moved to the Richard Rogers Theater on Broadway and played for 780 performances. And it's since been made into a movie, which is not my favorite. But I just think his work doesn't all adapt well to the screen. Mm-hmm. I think it's better on stage. But yes, he had a long career, wrote 30 plays, most of which have been adapted to film.
Go
ahead.
Do you think that the adaptation issue, because a lot of his work is really dialogue driven?
Yes.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, some of his films have been very, very good. The Odd Couple, for example, and even made into a TV series. And now there's the women's version.
Wouldn't that be fun, Sherry?
Oh, it would.
To do on the stage here?
It would. It really would.
Yeah.
He's, you know, had a long, varied career, won the Pulitzer for this one, and just a very busy man, died a year ago in August.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, tell us about the play, Lost in Yonkers. It's a couple of boys get sent to stay with their grandma
yes.
and aunt.
Yes.
In Yonkers, apparently, which is in New York City, if people don't
no. Yeah, yeah. So it's 1942, and Eddie Kernitz is the father. He has recently lost his wife, who died of cancer. He had, of course, no medical insurance, and so he wanted the best for his wife, and he went into debt with a loan shark, and now he has to pay this back. Well, lo and behold, it's wartime, and there's a job that becomes available that requires him to travel. but he needs some place to leave the boys while he's paying off his debt. He and his mother are estranged. She did not like his wife. She's a very tough, stern old woman, very set in her ways. And her whole family is pretty much afraid of her. So he has to kind of go groveling to grandma to get her to keep the boys. And they are not real excited about it either. There are four kids in the family. There were originally six, but two had died. And so there's the aunt who lives at home with grandma, who has some kind of a learning disability as a result of a fever in childhood. And grandma treats her like a child and really does not give her the credit that she's due for all of the things that she's quite capable of. And she's just a fun character, played by Nikki Stein. Jamie Nelson is doing Eddie Kernitz. Yvette Tapana is Grandma. And then you have the two boys, who are Kagan Koski and Brody Ireland. Great kids to work with. They have an uncle who's a kind of gangster, mobster wannabe. His name is Louie, and he's played by Rob Lewis. And their other aunt is their aunt Gert, who is played by Anne-Marie Rudstrom. And she has grown up so afraid of grandma that when she talks, she kind of chokes on her words. She has a breathing, speaking issue, but mostly when she's at grandma's house.
Oh, wow.
A tick.
Yeah.
A stress-induced tick.
Yes. Yes.
You know, I thought I thought that Bella was a very complex character.
Very.
And how do you play a character like that in this day and age? You know, when it was written, even, you know, in the 90s, you know, saying somebody is slow was, mm-hmm. you know, more accepted than now. How do you deal with that?
Well, I think that this is the reason that you do a show like this, is to demonstrate how multifaceted everyone is, and that society and people are often quick to dismiss people who have any sort of a disability and kind of write them off. And I think it was Aristotle who said in the Poetics that the purpose of theater is to educate the public. And I think that this is a really good example of it, that she's quite an interesting character, and we need to take the time to get to know people and see beyond what is apparent in someone's disability. It's not what they should be judged by, not what makes them worthy as a person.
Have there been any changes to her dialogue or dialogue to her over the years?
No.
No?
No. Not that I'm aware of.
Mm-hmm. How big is the you mentioned the main cast. Is that the whole cast?
That's it. That's the whole cast. Seven people.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Mm-hmm. Man. What about the crew?
Oh, we have lots of wonderful people working behind the scenes. Terry Burdick is my producer. Oh. And she and Ian McEwen are doing lights for me. Rebecca Gilman and Nikki Stein have been involved with posters and programs and sort of those kinds of things. Rita Eddy, Alan Oxier, Tony Zilka, Ken Duff are the primary set crew. I would also really like to thank my husband, William Johnson, for his physical and emotional support during all of this. He's done a lot of behind-the-scenes things as well. Jodine McAuliffe is our costumer. What have I left out?
Rita.
I said Rita. Yes.
I must have been coughing over here. Trying to cough quietly.
No, she does so many wonderful things behind the scenes.
Including cookies.
Yeah, sometimes especially cookies. They're like what get us through the night.
So with the possible exception of my good friend, Mr. Oxier, nobody in that play sounds old enough to remember the 40s, the old days, and the language style and the patterns of speaking. And, Neil Simon was good at writing in the language of the time.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. How are your cast doing in nailing that?
I think one of the things that's really fun is the character of Louis, the gangster, because he's just full of little one-liners. And that's where a great deal of the comedy in the show comes in, is a lot of his interactions with the boys. A lot of fun.
Have you ever, I can't imagine you've seen it, but have you ever seen the animated TV show called Gravity Falls?
No.
Just occurred to me that it was probably based on Lost in Yonkers, now that I think about it.
Oh, interesting.
Except for being sent to New York, kids are sent to the wilds of Oregon. Gravity Falls, Oregon. Anyway, that was just a quick aside. Well, when are the show times and such?
Okay, we open Friday night at 7 o'clock this week, Fridays and Saturday at 7. Sunday we have a performance at 2. And then again the following week, the 22nd, 23rd, and 24th. Did I get that right?
Friday, Saturday, Sunday?
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. 7 o'clock on Friday, 2 o'clock on Sunday.
Oh.
Tickets are $20.
At the auditorium or the... At
the Kenai Performers
headquarters
over, it's 44045 K Beach Road, and it is right behind Subway.
That's a great space, actually.
It's a marvelous space.
It has transformed since we went into that building. Mm-hmm. Transformed greatly.
Yes, yes. And one of the things that was very challenging for me is having worked with the kids at the high school in the big auditorium for years. Was just the whole idea of breaking it down to a smaller size, which has been really interesting, and I like it. It's very personal. It's very up close and intimate. Yeah, it's nice.
Mm-hmm. How many sets are there?
Just one.
Okay.
Never changes it. The entire thing takes place in Grandma's apartment, which is located above the family business, the candy and ice cream shop downstairs, which we never see.
Right.
Yeah.
They're just insinuated.
Right, right.
Right. Well, tell me more about the actors that you have here. I recognize some of these names from performances in the past. I believe Yvette played the Wicked Witch of the East, North, The Wiz.
Oh, we're going back few minutes.
Yeah. I think I remember seeing her in that.
She and I met... for the first time in 2000, doing Fiddler on the Roof. Oh. And that was the first show that I did with Kenai Performers, back with Carol Ford.
That was a wonderful production.
It was a lot of great people in that show. And then she and I, the following year, we were in Music Man together in 2001. And we did, for Triumvirate, we'll give a little credit to the competition. We did Steel Magnolias together. She was the mom, and I was the hairdresser.
Mm-hmm. I had no idea that you played Truby Jones.
Which is the part that you played when Kenai Performers did it.
It is. I had no idea that you had played that part. That's funny,
Bless
Sherry.
Your heart. I just had a really good time doing that show, and I could do it again.
I did hair... on stage for the entire performance.
Yeah.
Was that the case?
Yeah.
When you were Truby?
Yeah. I mean, it was a lot of fiddling around, putting in curlers and brushing them out, and yeah.
It was real hairdressing live on stage, for sure. Yeah, I think I met Yvette during The Dining Room, which was a production done at the old King's Building, I think in 05, 06 maybe, that Laura Forbes directed. Uh-huh. And of course, her parents are some of the founders of Kenai Performers. And she had directed, it was the first show I did with Kenai Performers after I moved to the area. And that was the first time I met Yvette.
Oh, that's really great. Well, you know, that was the last show that I directed at the high school.
The Dining Room?
The Dining Room in 2013, yeah.
Yeah. So theater is it's a pretty big thing in this community. If people don't realize it, it's not just the two big theaters, but there's people who do some side gigs too.
Yes, yes.
And we're going to talk about one of those a little later, aren't we?
I sure hope so.
Yeah. Regarding Lost in Yonkers, the story, you mentioned it, This guy owes money to a loan shark, so he has to go on the road. His two sons go to live with the grandma and the aunt, and hijinks ensue.
Yes.
I'm still interested kind of in the story of Bella. She falls in love and wants to get married. Is that a subplot?
A subplot. Yeah. And of course, initially everyone just thinks it's all in her head, and they kind of discount the whole thing. And eventually you learn that she really was in love. Or is, or was, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Do we see the guy?
No.
No, okay.
No, you do in the movie.
Right, oh, okay.
Yeah, yeah. That's one of the things that's different.
Ah, but what you mentioned earlier, you didn't like the movie, or as much, I guess.
I just didn't think it translated well, and they threw things like that in there that I thought distracted from the actual story, but, you know, just my opinion.
Mm-hmm. Well, there's so much to pay attention to in that story that mm-hmm. if more things are added, it seems like it would have been distracting.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I think, you know, when you do a film, you're playing to a different audience and trying to appeal to different
sure.
things with your cinematography and all of that. And it's just a very different experience.
Mm-hmm.
How the boys in the play are like 12 and 13?
13 and 15.
13 and 15.
And my guys are, well, one is 16 and the other is 13.
Mm-hmm. How do they find the characters?
They, from what I hear from them and their families, they're having a ball.
Mm-hmm.
And they've been really fun to work with.
I was telling Sally before you showed up that I've only been in two productions in my life. It was first and second grade. I played a tree and then a drummer in a Thanksgiving play. And so I've never had these experiences, these joys that everybody else talks about. So I'm curious about them, naturally. I guess I kind of wish those two boys were here right now, because I have a bunch of questions for them about that. But it's okay. They're at school, and education is important. How do you teach them to be these other people that are so completely different? I mean, there's 80 years ago is when this happened. So,
but the feelings that these kids are going through are no different from the feelings that a kid would have today if that was the situation. If you all of a sudden got dumped at somebody's house that you didn't really know, and she's not really very nice, and there is all this craziness around, there's that apprehension that any teenager would feel. And I think it's a very uncomfortable time in your life in a lot of ways without the extenuating circumstances. Gosh, kids come into theater still closer to their ability to interact with an imaginary world. Uh-huh. They're still closer to that. They're more malleable. All you have to do is show them what you want. And they'll give it to you, but you can't expect that they're just going to automatically know what looks good on stage. But they pick it up pretty quickly. It was really interesting when we added lights and sound. One of the boys said, "Oh, yeah, I need to be turned this way, don't I?" And I'm like, "Oh yeah, you do. Wow. If you're not walking into the light, this is the one time you can walk into the light safely." But yeah, we need to see your face, and we hear you a lot better when you're speaking with your face forward. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. One of the neat things that Kenai Performers does do, and it helps these kids out a lot when it comes time for auditioning for a show like this, they have the summer drama camp, and they teach kids some of the basics that, you know, if you're cast in a play and you're on stage and the director says, "I need you to come down left," the average Joe is not going to know what that means. And in the theater camp, they really try and teach them all of the lingo so that by the time they do get cast by Sherry Johnson, they are going to know what she means when she tells them to go down left, up right, center, whatever it is. And I was going to add, too, that one of the neat things about Sherry as a director is how well she guides her actors into developing the character rather than just saying, you know, sit here, say it like this, do that. It's a process of developing that character by the person who's playing it. And the character is going to be different based on whoever it is that's cast in that play. And you're really good at that, Sherry.
I try to do that by asking questions. You know, how do you think a person would feel in this situation? Or what does your face look like when you're really happy or when you're faking it? Rather than just tell people, I would rather that it comes from them. If I need to, I will be very direct and say, turn your feet at exactly this angle and stand right there and don't move. Freeze right now. And, you know, if you've spent the time developing that relationship that allows people to find their own character, then when you have to be very direct, and sometimes when you're tired, cranky, and blunt, they get what you want, and they know that it's not directed personally at them. It's just where you are.
Right, right. Yeah.
I want to jump in just a sec. You mentioned about the summer theater camp.
Yeah.
One of my students, here I am going, I hate hearing people do that on the radio, and here I am doing it myself. One of the kids, Kagan, is a graduate of the drama camp.
At several years, because I think I directed drama camp for like 10 years.
Yeah, wow.
And he was in a couple of mine and continued to be in them. And it shows when he's on stage, and it's no wonder he's been cast in this part. He's perfectly capable of it, and he's really a great young actor in this community, and I see him doing it for years to come.
Well, and I have to tell you a funny comment that he made. He said, I love doing this because I can be as loud as I want to be, and nobody tells me to be quiet. And he projects beautifully.
Spoken like a true, what, 15-year-old?
Oh, man. He plays Jay?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
Yes.
Now, is that the main character? Is that the lead?
Yeah, it's pretty equal between the two boys.
Oh, okay.
They are on stage almost the entire show. They have just enough time off stage to change their clothes and grab their props. And they really carry it. And I was so impressed with how well they memorized and how quickly. I think they memorized faster than the adults.
Oh, wow.
And maybe that's because their brains are younger and
more malleable.
Yes.
Boy, I remember the days. How about Louis? Who did you say played that? Was that
Rob
Jamie?
Lewis?
Rob Lewis.
Uh-huh.
That's got to be a fun character to
play. Oh, my gosh. It's been fun to watch Louis develop on stage, and he just gets larger than life every time we have a rehearsal. I see something new and it grows, and he interacts beautifully with the boys. They're a neat team.
Yeah. You know, I had, one more question. Is this, I was reading about it. I hadn't actually read about the play. I knew about the play, but I hadn't read like a synopsis.
Uh-huh.
Or anything. But it seems to be a cross between a comedy and a drama. And how are you playing it?
It has elements of both.
Mm-hmm.
There are probably people who would downplay the drama. I think it's critical. I think it's where the message comes from. It's how you realize that all of the things that contributed to Grandma being such a mean old woman, and all of the things that Bella has had to deal with during her life, that's the majority of the drama is between Mama and Bella. And it's... There are a couple scenes that are pretty intense. We have it rated PG-13 for language and content, and I think that's an appropriate rating. I mean, the language is not dreadful, but it is there. And the content is heavy in some places, which is alleviated by the comedy, some of which is over-the-top, just silliness and fun. As Louis gets pursued by a couple of other mobsters because he wasn't quite as up and up with them as he should have been. And so we have just a lot of little subplots.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That's great. Let's take a quick break here. It is about 10:30. You're listening to the Kenai Conversation. I'm Jay Barrett. We have Sherry Johnson and Sal Cassano in here. We're talking about the theater. We've got Lost in Yonkers, which is opening this weekend, Friday, I believe. And then we'll talk more about that when we come back here in just a couple minutes. Back the official music of the Kenai Conversation. It's 10:35. You're listening to the Kenai Conversation on KDLL. I'm your host this morning. We're talking about the theater. I've got Sherry Johnson in here. We're talking about Lost in Yonkers, the 1991 Neil Simon Pulitzer Prize-winning play that is running for 2 weekends, starting this weekend. And Sal Cassano in here, who in a little while we're going to be talking about a production of the Vagina Monologues that she put on this summer for charity. You know, Sherry, I had a question. I'd almost not asked this. I completely forgotten about it until I checked my notes. Grandma, in the story, has got secret money that everybody wants, right?
Yes, and she does.
Yeah, and so now, like, you know, everybody is... Well, go ahead and tell the story. I don't need to tell it.
Well, they discover that Grandma has savings, and it's hidden somewhere in the house or the store, and Jay would really like to find that money and send it to his dad, but I'll just not tell what I no spoiler alerts here, but yeah, that is another little subplot, is Grandma's money that she has saved over the years.
Wow.
Yeah.
And I guess without giving too much away, it's not just Jay who's interested in this money, right?
It's primarily Jay.
Oh, okay. I thought Louis was all over it, too.
No, Louis's got his own money.
Oh, okay.
In fact, the money that Louis has is part of what's gotten him in trouble.
Oh, all right. Man, interesting. Interesting.
You've got to go see it, Jay.
I guess I'm going to have to.
And bring 100 of your friends.
That would be marvelous.
All my friends are listening right now, so come on down. Come on down.
What are the dates again, Sherry?
The dates are November 15th, 16th, and 17th. The following weekend, November 22nd, 23rd, and 24th, Friday and Saturday nights at 7, Sunday at 2. Tickets are $20. PG-13.
Can you get tickets early?
Tickets are available online. Kenai Performers has a website that will connect you to ticket sales. And what is they're that? Also available at the door.
KenaiPerformers.org.
Correct.
Right. Okay.
How many people does the theater seat?
I believe that we are looking at approximately 75. We haven't set up the chairs, but I think that's about right.
Oh, okay. Yeah. I was only in there once. I can't even remember what the production was, but it was dark, so I didn't know how many seats were in there. Sherry, tell me about when we went off the air here for the break. You're talking about your sort of personal elements in this story that you can relate to yourself.
When I was growing up, my mother's parents came from France, and they settled in New Jersey after the First World War. So I grew up with immigrant grandparents, and my grandfather died when I was quite young. So my grandmother spent some years living with us and some years living with my aunt and cousins in New Jersey. So I grew up in a bilingual household, visiting the East Coast very frequently during summers. And I think I grew up with an ear for dialect. But I see a lot of, you know, I see a lot of the kinds of experiences that immigrant families had in the early 1900s. That's a very personal thing for me because I know how life was for my grandparents. And then growing up in the 30s and 40s, I know what life was like for my mother and her sister. And so I've seen a lot of that and been in New York and spent enough time there to recognize some elements in this show that just, that, you know, they kind of touch me on a personal level.
It sounds like the kind of play, a story that kind of needs New York to be told, you know, an immigration center where people are coming in from all over.
Well, and I think that's also a very relevant thing with what's happening in our world today related to immigration, related to not having medical insurance. There are just a lot of very timely aspects to this show.
Mm-hmm. You know, I didn't know that you were second generation U.S. citizen. Is that what it is? Right?
Well, both of my grandparents were naturalized citizens, which I didn't know until I knew my grandfather was, but I did not know that my grandmother had gotten citizenship. I didn't know that until after she died, and I inherited, because I'm the one who speaks French, I inherited all the papers and photos and things and found her naturalization papers.
Yeah, we rarely think about that. But recently, you know, because it's so relevant right now, I had sat there and thought, you know, I'm here by the skin of my teeth.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, my father is from Acquaviva, Italy.
Wow.
You know, came over as a baby, but
yeah,
still.
Wow. That makes me wonder. I don't know where my grandparents' naturalization papers are. Somebody else in the family must have them, not me. Well, let's see. You know, we have the phone is working. And if anybody would like to give us a call, we do have about 20 minutes. The number is 283-8414. If you'd like to give a call, we're talking about Lost in Yonkers, which Sherry Johnson is producing for the Kenai Performers. It's opening on Saturday. It'll run this weekend. Oh, Friday, rather. It's Friday. And we'll run this weekend and next weekend, Friday and Saturday evening performances, matinees on the Sundays. Oh, and it's at the Kenai Performers Playhouse on Cay Beach Road, behind the subway. That's all you need to know, behind the subway. Anything else I should ask you about Lost in Yonkers?
Gosh, I think that we've pretty much covered it. There is a no-host beer and wine.
Oh.
So anyone underage needs to be accompanied by parent or guardian.
Oh, to the play.
Right.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Right, so no 19-year-olds can go there by themselves.
Well, I think it's 18 and over can,
oh, okay.
can yeah.
Oh, be in a place where it is.
They can, yeah, they can.
Yes, but not be served.
Oh, okay. Yes.
Oh, I get it.
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah, kind of like at a restaurant where you can take your kids in before, what is it, 9 or 10 o'clock or whatever.
Right.
And I think that's the same with theater. You can come in with your kids and.
Yeah.
Terrific.
And everyone's, you know, of course, checked and stamped and ID'd and all of the yada yada that we do.
Can we talk about the vagina monologues? Do you have time?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Totally. And this is totally separate from
Kenai Performers.
Thanks. Or Triumvirate. This was a group of local actors and local folks who... responded to the let's put a production on. Well, Sherry and I co-directed it together out at Archie's Bunker, which is a lodge in Kasilof, and it was probably one of the most delightful experiences co-directing with anyone.
I would concur.
Thank you.
It was so seamless.
It was easy.
And well, Sally, you and I met doing Oliver, and I'm not a dancer, but Sally was able to choreograph me in a way that made me comfortable on stage, and we sort of bonded at that point.
We did, and we still call you Mrs. Corny. My husband still refers to her as Mrs. Corny.
That's so funny. I shall scream.
Well, so...
First, let me ask. I don't want to tell our. I don't want to mansplain to our listeners what the vagina monologues
good idea.
Are about. So perhaps you could first fill in our audience what the production is, where it came from, and what it handles.
It's a play written by Eve Ensler. Do you remember what year she wrote that?
Oh, 96. Not off the top of my head.
96. And
it's based on interviews that were done with women, primarily in the United States, but I think some overseas as well. Well, definitely some.
Definitely, because we had some Sarajevo stuff. And,
and then she did a one-woman show based on those interviews and turned them into monologues. Some of them are hysterically funny, and some of them will bring you to tears.
I think what some people might be wondering is, why is it called that, and is it only about that? Or is it about women's greater experience? Once again, try not to mansplain here, just hoping it's
No, that's an excellent question. Yes, it is about women's greater experience. The interviews were geared around things like, if your vagina could speak, what would it talk about? What would it wear? And that's sort of the origin of the title, I believe.
Well, because traditionally, it's, you know, women, of course, have been so silenced with that. And, of course, the way we feel is that all of us are silenced, and all parts of us get silenced when we are silenced, you know, vocally. We're silenced in every way. And it has been worse in years past. But the reason we had decided to do this particular show was based on the financial cuts being taken to our local Planned Parenthood clinic. And it was important to us to see if we could raise, you know, offset some of that. You know, it's the only clinic that serves this community, and that's important to Sherry and I both, I think.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
And so...
Well, we had... Okay, let's back up a little bit. Sally and I have wanted to do this show forever.
Yeah.
And really didn't feel like there was a venue that we would be able to do that in Kenai. And then we hit on the lodge and went, could this work? And we made it work.
We did. You know, for 40 seats.
Yeah.
And with the renovations that we did in there, and there's an actual... stage and the back curtain that separates the kitchen off, and space for 40 attendees, and we basically sold out.
Yeah,
every night, and we did 6 shows.
Oh wow!
And you know,
and raised over $6,000.
Raised over $6,000 for our local Planned Parenthood clinic, and it was very gratifying taking that into them.
Yeah. And the relationship that built the bond between those of us that were in the cast. Was just phenomenal. Well, we still have our own little private chat group.
Oh, still, yes. And, well, you kind of have to, you become close with a group of people, especially when you're talking about such intimate things. And those monologues were not, they're not easy. It is not easy, yeah. Even for actors, to get up on a stage and, you know, talk about the down there's.
Yeah.
Which was one of the characters in the show.
Well, you know, one thing that I've been curious about is, as an actor, what is it like talking about the business down there's from somebody else's words? Somebody you're reading somebody else's words about their business.
Well, let me tell you about the character that I played in that. And Sherry and I, as the directors, we ended up playing a couple different characters. You know, we had, what was 9 cast members?
Yeah, I think
9 right. cast members, but there...
No, we had 10.
10 cast members, but more monologues than that. So some of us had to do a few different things. My character was actually a woman in her 70s who really didn't talk about those things. She was from an era where it wasn't, you know, well, it still is kind of happening, but... you just really didn't mention it, and it was forgotten about, and she referred to it as sort of like the cellar. And there's really no reason to go down there or worry about it, but it's got to be there, you know, because otherwise the bedrooms would all be in the basement, you know. But as I studied that character and was, you know, practicing, and I went through several different, you know, types, and I generally don't do accents or anything, but for some reason, and I don't know if it was because we did this at Archie's Bunker Lodge in Casilla, but that character took on a Jersey Edith Bunker accent about in the 3rd week of rehearsals, and it just stuck, and it was a really neat character to do, and I fell in love with that character, and still will sometimes rattle on in that voice to myself sometimes. You know, she was just a neat character to play.
You know, I would, I'm just going to quote something from the New York Times here. They called the play probably the most important piece of political theater in the last decade. And that was, they wrote that just last year.
Well, I kind of agree with that.
I think it was very groundbreaking, and I think it spurred some consciousness raising. One of the things I really enjoyed were some of the older men who were at the show, who I think were probably dragged there by their wives. And after the show, visiting with them, well, I had one gentleman who said, you know, I think I learned something tonight. And his wife said, don't get any ideas.
Ones I talked to, the wife said, get some ideas.
Yeah, well, yeah, there's that too. But it was just really interesting that they came out laughing, and they had a really good time, and were, well, what someone said to me, I am more comfortable with this subject now than I would have been before I walked in the door.
You know, that's true. I saw it once in Seattle years and years ago, and I was semi-dragged to it. I was on a date, and you know, you kind of want to say,
you want to look enlightened.
Yeah. And so I did not come out laughing. None of those were funny stories that night. And because they change, don't they? Do the stories change?
Well, there are different versions of the show. Yes, that's true.
Yeah, this one was all full heavy of yucks. Yeah.
Oh.
No, there was about, all the horrible things.
Well, and the major place, the major part that I played in the show was the woman from Bosnia who had survived a rape camp. And that is probably the hardest to listen to, the hardest piece to deal with in that show. And yeah, it was a toughie. It really was.
You know, we posted trigger warnings on the front door of the lodge to let people know that we were going to talk about some difficult subject matter, and that, you know, there were a few who sat behind after the show ended to kind of just gather themselves. One gentleman who could, at the end of the show, all of the monologuers, all of the actors, finish by singing "I Am Woman," and they exit out the doors, and then the cast or the audience files out, and the cast is already outside, and then they can file out and talk to us. And there were several people who cried as they left and asked us if they could hug us and thanked us for doing it. And some of them were men who had tears and thanked us for talking about such difficult subjects.
We're talking about the vagina monologues on the Kenai Conversation. I have Sal Cassano and Sherry Johnson here. We have about 8 minutes left. If you have any questions, you can give us a shout at 283-8414. We'll be happy to put you on the air in the minute or two we have left here.
You know, we'd like to do it, make a yearly.
I was going to just ask you about that, because you had mentioned it before. You'd like to do it. And I was reading on the Wikipedia page about the vagina monologues that they actually have a program for charity.
All of the performance rights for the show go to, it's a domestic fight, violence.
Yes, worldwide.
Worldwide,
Yeah, so tell me about your plans. Oh, wait, we have a phone call. Let's do that instead. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi, my name is Charlotte. I was in the show.
Oh, hello, Charlotte.
Hi. I was calling just because the show wasn't necessarily just to point out the yuck, because the yucks are the things that really need to be brought to light. And when they're brought to light, it can stop the yuck from happening.
Sure, just with awareness. You know, it's a good awareness project indeed, Charlotte.
Charlotte, what part did you play? What monologue did you read?
I was the angry vagina.
All right.
And the what people said about that performance was always that you should do stand-up. Like, she was hilarious. She was hilarious in that part, and I hope you keep thinking about doing stand-up.
Well, I hope that we can do it as an annual thing. It would be really amazing to take on that and do that to raise money for different areas that need it, like the Homer Planned Parenthood would be another one to do for.
Oh, sure. I don't think they're not Planned Parenthood down there, but they do have,
a family planning clinic.
Yeah, for sure.
What? But it's wonderful to hear about it on the radio. It was a...
It's good to hear your voice. I haven't talked to you in a while.
Oh, thank you, Sherry. I'm amazed at everything you've said about Yonkers. I can't wait to go see it. And I'm happy to hear that there's some recognition going on for the vagina monologues that was put on, because it was tough to do, but it was eye-opening and kind of helped make me self-aware.
Nice.
Oh, wow.
Nice.
Had you ever performed in anything like that before?
No.
No? Have you performed before? Are you experienced in the theater?
Yes.
Oh, okay. What was it like reading something that someone else wrote that was, presumably very personal?
It's like when you pick up someone's diary, but you can identify with that emotion. You can feel their pain. You can feel the comedy. You can feel the anger and sympathize with it and kind of take it into your own character.
Oh, wow. Well, thanks so much for calling.
Absolutely. You guys have a wonderful day.
You too.
Bye-bye.
Bye. It's nice to get a call from one of the actors.
Cast members. Yeah, I have a personal connection to that cast member. It's my child.
Oh.
And, you know, she has done theater, and she's been great in it, but hadn't been on the stage in several years. And I was just, of course, like any mother, beaming with pride. And she was hilarious, Sherry.
Oh, she was a riot.
Yeah.
Yeah.
She did a great
job. And you're right.
And
she should do stand-up.
I think so, too.
Wow. You recorded these shows, didn't you?
There is a recording of them, yes. We were very careful about that, though.
Mm. Yeah, it's not something that would be for public consumption.
Oh.
That would be a violation of copyright.
Oh, yeah. Right.
Yeah.
Right. Well, for
cast members.
For rehearsal purposes, yeah. You know, feedback and that sort of thing.
All right. Oh, interesting. I get it. Well, let's see. We have to fill 2 more minutes. What? Tell us one more interesting thing about Lost in Yonkers, which opens on Friday night.
Oh, my gosh. You put me on the spot. It will make you laugh. It will make you think. Come and have a good experience. I guess that maybe one of the things I could say is that you get 2 hours where you can put aside your own stuff that's going on in your life and move into an imaginary world. And theater is just so magical. You're just transported, and I think it's a great way to spend the evening.
Terrific. Well, that's Friday and Saturday at 7 and Sunday at
2 o'clock.
2 o'clock. So next 2 Saturdays, next 2 Fridays, and the next 2 Sundays. I did not read those dates very well. So Friday, Saturday, Sunday, the next 2 of each. Sal, what last thing would you like to go out on here?
Just at how important live theater is to a community and how it contributes to the health and well-being of the community. And I would encourage anyone to get involved in it, especially for kids. You know,
support it in the schools.
Definitely support it in the schools. It is very important.
And speaking of the schools, I believe this weekend is
Beauty and the Beast.
Beauty and the Beast is So High.
It's So High.
Yes, directed by Terry Zoff-Schessler. And I think Kent Peterson is doing the music for that. But that's going to be a great show.
Yeah.
And that opens Friday, I think. Friday night at So High, right?
Yeah,
at So High.
Yeah.
Terrific. Well, thank you both very much, Sherry Johnson and Sal Cassano.
Thanks, Jay.
Coming in to talk about plays, Lost in Yonkers and the Vagina Monologues. This is listener-supported public radio for the Central Kenai Peninsula, KDLL, 91.9 FM, Kenai, Sultana. This episode of the Kenai Conversation was recorded on Wednesday, November 13th, so please keep that in mind when considering any of the dated references made in the show.
We've got a small business loan that we can loan you up to $25,000 to get started or to help you with a business.
You can make a living out of it. However, you have to have it set up right. You have to have enough contacts.
What if we put some golden tickets in it and sold them, just like in the book?
The Central Kenai Peninsula faces economic challenges not only at the hands of international oil markets, but closer to home. The governor and the borough mayor's offices are slashing budgets left and right.
So I wouldn't really say a boom, but maybe an uptick.
Most joints I sell come in 1 gram or half gram increments.
Outdoor recreation is a huge thing in Alaska, but how does this translate into economic development?
Every week on KDLL's Econ 91.9, we look at how businesses and individuals are responding to this challenging economic climate. Join us each Friday at 9 a.m. and 5 p.m. for KDLL's Econ 91.9.